Our seventh case for this morning is Schaefer against Basie. Mr. Salem.
May it please the court, my name is Maurice Salem. I represent the plaintiff appellant in this case, Schaefer. This case is about whether the plaintiff exhausted his administrative remedies while in prison requesting medical attention. The last time this case was before you, you remanded it for the purpose of determining whether or not the plaintiff inmate, the caseworker, was present at the time the plaintiff was in jail. Well, basically what you did is you denied the motion, you reversed the district court's order granting the motion for summary judgment on the grounds that you had two swearing affidavits, and that wasn't sufficient to grant the motion for summary judgment. Now, and you set us all back to do an evidentiary hearing. At that evidentiary hearing, the defendants produced a case counselor for the inmate whose name is Kramer. And at that hearing, the plaintiff testified that this individual was not his case counselor.
But there's an awful lot of evidence. First of all, from photographs in the record, Mr. Kramer, the one who was produced, certainly, I don't know whether he had a stomach stapling or what happened to him, but he certainly lost a lot of weight and looks quite different. But perhaps more importantly, there was evidence at the hearing that the district judge credited that there really was just this one male Kramer, who it was a woman named Kramer as well, who isn't really involved here. And so Mr. Schaefer's theory that there had to be some other Kramer just doesn't seem to have any support.
Well, let's look at the balance on both sides. On the defendant's side, you have the witness testifying, and he said, I vaguely remember Mr. Kramer, but I honestly can't say. So,
and we have records then from the prison that give us exact dates as to when Kramer was the relevant officer and when he wasn't.
Correct, Your Honor. And those records also show that Mr. G. Rowe was the plaintiff's case counselor. But that must be wrong because the plaintiff was never in units 4 and 6, which Mr. G. Rowe was there. In other words, those records are not accurate. We presented evidence in form of testimony from the plaintiff showing that those records aren't accurate because supposedly those records show that another caseworker, G. Rowe, was Mr. Schaefer's case counselor, and that wasn't the case.
Well, why wasn't that just an issue for the court to resolve? A little bit of evidence on one side, a little bit of evidence on another side.
Well, when the defendant's counsel is arguing that we had an opportunity to do discovery before the evidentiary hearing. However, we didn't, Your Honor. There was no way of knowing that they were going to produce the wrong Mr. Kramer. And also, Your Honor, after the evidentiary hearing, we filed a motion to compel discovery. That was denied.
But they couldn't find any other Mr. Kramers. It's not like it was Mr. Smith, where there were 15 of them, and you have to pick one.
Well, Your Honor, the evidence on the other side we produced is that, we produced a document, a course report showing that the plaintiff took a course with the actual Mr. Kramer. And in that course, Your Honor, there are two individuals who signed the progress report, prison personnel, who knew Mr. Kramer.
Does that course report have Mr. Kramer's name in it?
Yes, it does. It's Exhibit B to the motion to reconsider, and it's in the appendix on page 21. And it has Mr. Schaefer's name. I retract that. I'm not 100% sure it has Mr. Kramer's name, but it is a course.
Well, see, I didn't think it had Mr. Kramer's name. He says it had Mr. Kramer's name, but that's not the same as it having.
It had Ms. Phyllis King's name and Ms. N. Braxterville's name, and these individuals knew Mr. Kramer, who taught the course. Your Honor. And
so in other words, you have testimony from people, but you don't actually have hard evidence that Mr. Kramer...
Well, Your Honor, we have statements from two former inmates who provided statements describing the true Mr. Kramer, the one who was the case counselor. And those are Mr. Tully and an attorney inmate, Pastor Hogue. They both testified that to the description of Mr. Kramer, who's under 6 feet tall and overweight and without a full set of hair.
But he lost all that weight.
Your Honor, the point is that there's a great deal of evidence and testimony on one side showing that this is not the actual Mr. Kramer. Also, Your Honor, the plaintiff testified that he assisted Mr. Kramer in the Department of Education during a jobs fair.
So is the theory that there's another Kramer then?
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely.
And that all these personnel records are wrong?
Your Honor, there was only one personnel record produced, and that is wrong because it shows that the plaintiff was in units 4 and 6. He testified he was never in those units.
Well, it's tough to come up here and say something necessarily is wrong when the district court found the other way, and all you've got is your client's oral testimony on that, right?
No, we have also documented evidence. That's the progress report, which I spoke with Judge Wood about. And that report, Your Honor, shows that he took a course. That course was taught
in terms of what unit? In terms of what units he was in?
Well, you see, the point is, after this whole thing dawned on us, after the evidentiary hearing, we sought discovery. We filed a motion to compel discovery. We were not allowed to have that, Your Honor.
Right, because you'd already, in essence, had the trial.
But, Your Honor, the trial, prior to the trial, we did have opportunity for discovery, but we had no way of knowing they were going to bring in the wrong Kramer. Your Honor, also I mentioned in there where at the start of this case, when I was involved, I spoke with opposing counsel, and he asked me which Kramer was my client's case counselor. So, in other words, from the beginning of the case, I do recall that there were two Kramers, male Kramers. And this is what's bringing me here. I wouldn't waste your time, my time. I have no doubt that there's another Kramer there, Your Honor. I know this individual, the plaintiff. He's not delusional. And I have prior inmates. Also, Your Honor, the job fair, he indicated Mrs. Cohen's. She's the mistress of ceremony for the jobs fair. She worked with the actual Kramer. We have so many evidence. We have witnesses here that to show that the Kramer they produced is not the real Kramer. I have no doubt in my mind.
So is this a conspiracy?
Excuse me.
Is it a conspiracy to cover this up?
My feeling is that I believe that the initial affidavit that they received was from the wrong Kramer, and the actual Kramer might have left employment. Something must have happened. And
left not a trace of his existence.
Oh, no, yeah, there is a trace. The progress report, these individuals, the personnel in the prison that I mentioned, Ms. Phyllis and Ms. And also Ms. Cohen's, Your Honor, those are names of individuals that they were there. In addition, the statements of other inmates describing the actual Mr. Kramer. And what we're asking for is an opportunity just simply to go in and have some discovery to see whether the real Kramer was presented.
Can you direct us to any case that holds that denying post-trial discovery is an abuse of discretion?
Well, that's the standard for review. But here, the standard review is for motion for summary judgment.
No. Summary judgment was granted. It was reversed. We sent it back for an evidentiary hearing. You got it. Findings came out the wrong way for your client. Can you direct us to any cases holding it's an abuse of discretion and under what circumstances to deny post-trial discovery?
Well, Your Honor, here, this is a factual case. The issue...
Yes.
Obviously, the standard review is...
Let me repeat my question, if you didn't understand it. Can you direct us to any cases holding it's an abuse of discretion to deny post-trial discovery?
Yes, Your Honor. There are many. I can't offhand, Your Honor, but it depends on the facts of the case.
Did you cite some?
Well, no, I didn't, Your Honor, because my argument is that it's not an abuse of discretion standard. It's a motion for summary judgment standard. That's what I appealed from, the final decision, motion for summary judgment.
But the evidentiary hearing on exhaustion, actually, given our holding in the Pavey case, is a separate unit, if you will. It's something that's a self-contained hearing that the judge conducts. The judge resolves issues of fact in that evidentiary hearing pertaining to exhaustion. So I don't see why you think a summary judgment standard applies to those encased findings of fact inside the evidentiary hearing. We would give the usual deference to the trial judge's findings.
Yeah, I see my time is
you can answer that if you can answer Judge Hamilton's question.
Well,
certainly,
Your Honor, I can produce cases in the supplemental memorandum that shows that it is an abuse of discretion when the facts are overwhelming, Your Honor, that this is not the actual Mr. Kramer.
The court will – I'm going to let you sit down now. The court will decide whether we want supplemental filings or not. We'll let you know if we
Thank
do.
You,
Mr. Keeper.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Thomas E. Keeper, Assistant United States Attorney on behalf of the individual defendant appellees in this case. The case went back to the district court after our first oral argument and appeal in the case, for the district court to conduct an evidentiary hearing on the issue of exhaustion, an issue of exhaustion of administrative remedies, which absolutely is the burden of the defendants. The decision to remand the case was made in July of 2009. The court, giving an appropriate period of time for the parties to adjust to that particular remand, then scheduled a hearing. That hearing was scheduled in October of 2009 for a hearing date of November of 2009. Prior to the evidentiary hearing in November of 2009, the plaintiff appellant did no discovery in the case. Even though the affidavit of Mr. Kramer was in the record, the position of the defendants with regards to the exhaustion of remedies, keying on the existence and appearance of Mr. Kramer on that day at the prison camp, was in the record, the plaintiff did no discovery. Didn't depose anybody, didn't move to depose anybody, no interrogatories, no motions to produce. The evidentiary hearing on November the 10th, 2009, went forward where the defendants produced a witness that established that there was indeed a system of formal administrative remedies within the Bureau of Prisons. It existed. It was there and available for Mr. Schaefer. He did not exhaust that administrative remedy, and he was not impeded from exhausting that administrative remedy in any way. After that, or in support of that argument as well, since the allegation was that Mr. Kramer told Mr. Schaefer to use an alternative remedy procedure rather than the formal administrative
remedy. This is cop-out procedure.
And there are a number of ways for inmates to communicate with the prison guards.
Mm-hmm.
The formal administrative grievance procedure, which is going to put the prison on notice that there's a problem, that if they don't remedy it, could end up in court. That procedure, there is no question about the fact that it was not utilized, it was not invoked. The question was simply at that hearing, did he not invoke it because Stanley Kramer or Counselor Kramer told him not to do it? And in that case,
we needed the right Kramer there to testify.
The only Kramer, the only male Kramer at the FCC Terre Haute. And the prison records that was the subject of some discussion with this court in our previous oral
right.
argument.
So the records do go back as far as they need to capture Mr. Schaefer's time there?
They do. The review that was testified in rebuttal by witness Doucette Lundstrom was a review that in her testimony went all the way back to the early 1990s, where she in her review and asking other persons to review records for her so she could testify to that, that there was no Kramer other than Stanley Kramer and another female Kramer who is not involved in this case.
And the records that were checked, you said, were for the FCC Terre Haute, meaning the entire correctional complex?
The entire correctional complex. Prior to 2005, which is overlaps this period of time, Stanley Kramer was a counselor at the federal prison camp prior to 2005.
Which is where Mr. Schaefer's been, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
And prior to March of 2005, when the new penitentiary was opened, the complex at Terre Haute consisted of a prison camp and a penitentiary. When they opened the new penitentiary in March of 2005, it became a federal correctional complex. It now houses a prison camp, the penitentiary, the new penitentiary, and the old penitentiary is now a correctional institution, a lower security. So the complex is there. They share some administrative services and staff, but they each have their own designated contingent of staff working shifts within those institutions. So we went through the evidentiary hearing. We presented evidence to the court of Mr. Kramer's assignment to the penitentiary, not the prison camp. He couldn't have been at the prison camp. That came in the form of his time record, his certified timekeeper. That came in the form of his evaluations for the period of time in question, June of 2005. And it came in the form of correspondence welcoming him to the new unit counselor position at the penitentiary. At the conclusion of that hearing, then, the question became, from Mr. Schaefer's testimony, whether or not there was another Kramer. And in that respect, there was some post-hearing discussions between plaintiff's counsel and myself with regards to requests for information.
These exchange of letters where there's some requests, and you've indicated in your last response, as I recall, that they're just, for the most part, there were no such records kept. Seems like that was your answer.
Prison records are kept traditionally in the form of inmates.
Mm-hmm.
So they track these records through the inmate and the inmate number. And from that, the century system then will put you in touch with who the personnel were that they dealt with, their unit managers, their case counselors, programs that they might be involved in, financial obligations, program reviews, and that type of thing. But in terms of keeping the types of records that lists on a running basis who's employed within the entire complex and who's assigned, there's not a general list of that as I understand it. And certainly the records in this case reflect with the duty rosters. The duty rosters are kept by institution. So the mm-hmm. duty roster that was presented was the duty roster for that particular unit at the penitentiary.
So what about this discrepancy about which unit Mr. Rowe was assigned to? I'm trying to remember which one this was.
Well, the record is not developed on that. Certainly at the evidentiary mm-hmm. hearing, there was nothing said about that. This G. Rowe issue has kind of kicked up after the motion for reconsideration and, mm-hmm. and in a declaration that was filed by Mr. Schaefer in support of his motion for reconsideration. So it's unclear to me what the G. Rowe and the particular units. I do know, and what the record does suggest, is that over the period of time from the conviction to the sentencing, Mr. Schaefer had several issues, one of which came to this court on proper sentencing and allocation of time at a correctional halfway house to his sentence. And he was in and out for some medical treatment and for those sentencing issues in the prison. So he had, as you can see from the case counselor record that came in, some very short stays.
Mm-hmm.
When they come in to the system and they're introduced, show up for prison to be assigned to a unit, the system's going to assign them not only that unit, but a unit manager. But they may not have that contact with that unit manager. I don't know whether G. Rowe ever came into contact with him. I know that the record shows that for a period of time, and what appears to be a fairly short one, G. Rowe was at least designated to perform those functions for him. Maybe he didn't go to that unit. Maybe they moved him to a different bed. The record mm-hmm. is completely silent on that. In terms of the summary judgment hearing, the defendant's position is that the court held this hearing. The court clearly had two.
You mean the exhaustion hearing?
The exhaustion hearing, yes. Yeah. Yeah, so the Pavey evidentiary
yeah.
hearing. The court held this hearing, heard two very plausible stories from each side, and had to reconcile that evidence. The court made credibility findings, which are entitled to deference under Rule 52A for the trier of fact, and made its findings indicating that the defendants carried their burden of proof on the failure to exhaust, that Schaefer didn't exhaust, and they applied, the court applied the correct law to that finding, that being if he didn't exhaust his mandatory remedies, that dismissal without prejudice was required. The issue related to whether or not the motion to compel was properly denied relates to the after-hearing, the post-hearing request informally made between counsel. And the defendant's position is that we attempted in every way that we could. When a FOIA request was made, we transferred it to the appropriate FOIA people. And when requests for letters or documents were made in the form of a letter, we responded to that. That correspondence concluded in February of 2010. After that, the plaintiff never asked for any additional discovery, never petitioned the court to compel any additional discovery, and never complained that that discovery wasn't responsive to what their request was. We don't believe that the record supports any kind of a finding for an abuse of discretion in denial of that decision. And finally, we would say that the record with regards to the motion for reconsideration supports the fact that the motion was properly denied. It was not an abuse of discretion. It's an extraordinary, exceptional circumstance that is not supported in the record, and we would ask the court to affirm the district court's finding of summary judgment.
All right. Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Kipper? Just give you a minute.
Very briefly, Your Honor. On page 16 of my brief, I cite many details and three personnel, prison personnel, that knew actually the correct Mr. Kramer. And if we had any opportunity for discovery, this will resolve it one way or the other. And again, please keep in mind that we had no way of knowing that they were going to bring the wrong Mr. Kramer to the evidentiary trial.
They brought the Kramer who filed the affidavit, right?
I assume that's correct.
Okay. Why wasn't pre-hearing discovery sufficient for that?
There was no way of knowing that that's the wrong Kramer. That wasn't the Kramer who was the case counsel. It's impossible. How could we possibly
your
know
theory,
that?
Your theory was that the fellow who signed the affidavit was lying, right?
He was not the case counsel for the plaintiff, correct?
Okay.
You could have noticed up his deposition. Discovered in advance of the hearing. He was the wrong Kramer.
That's possible if we knew they were going to bring in the wrong Kramer, Your Honor. We had sufficient documents. We had that. But, Your Honor, I'm here as an officer of the court saying that I have no doubt that my client is accurate. With all this detailed information and the way I know of him, there's no doubt that if we had some discovery, we'll show that the real Kramer was withheld from us. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. Thank you. The case will be taken under advisement.